Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here's your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
So good to be with you, everybody. It is Monday, March 20th, 2017. Again, this podcast is created by mortgage professionals, certainly not professional radio people, but for by mortgage professionals, for mortgage professionals, and we're thrilled that you are making this a part of what you, the way you get information about what's going on in the industry. I mean, I said, look at it. It's a really good tool. I go watch, listen to my own podcast because of the content, and it's because of all those that are participating in it. So I want to say a special thank you at the top of the program to Alice, Joe, Andy, Sam, Paul Mullen, and virtually all the hot topic guests that we have on here. But thank you all for your contribution to this program. It is amazing how fast this continues to grow at, the rate it continues to grow at. So it's really good. We appreciate you being here. Our hot topic segment today, we've got Ari Karen with us with Offit Kerman. He's CEO also of Strategic Compliance Partners, and will be bringing us some legislative announcements, talking about some things about that are going on out there, his perspective on that. Always interested in Ari's perspective on where we see things going, especially with this new administration. What can we anticipate? What about, you know, with the PHH case? Where is that taking us? What's going on with the agencies? I mean, we've got a really jam-packed hot topic segment, and I'm so excited to have my good friend Ari Karen on the program with us. Have you been watching any of the March Madness? I tell you, the level of play, I'm talking about the basketball tournament, the high school basketball tournament, it is amazing. The level of play is over the top, and I'm looking at the professionalism, the just all-outness of these teams. They do not quit. And what I'm finding, for those that struggle, you know what I always like? I really like listening to the interviews after the fact. What they're saying is where they stumble is oftentimes at the basics, at the very foundational things, and for whatever reasons. So that's one of the services that I provide is the business process improvement, doing a ton of that work, and I'd love to talk to you about it. But we're really here to help you with information, what's going on in the industry. So I want to say a special thank you to our sponsors, ArchMI, the innovator, the creator of the innovative new RateStar program, Motivity Solutions, providing real-time reporting and dashboard and scorecards, as well as Velma, an efficient marketing and email platform, helping you get your message out, and Simplifile, a real-time electronic communication exchange, and Mortgage Collaborative, the power of the network, and, of course, D&H, which is moving your world forward through technologies. Did you see the announcement of D&H? They're being acquired by Vista, by a private equity firm out of the UK, and they're being combined with another company. So a lot is going on there. Big announcements, big investment by this company. I mean, if you saw the announcement, they're both a client and an advertiser, so I'll have a lot more information. I'm not sure what I can share other than it is really exciting to see some of the developments there at D&H. They bought the whole company, taking it private, combining it with a company that's got real strong services and banking services in Europe with no presence here. So when you combine these two companies, I tell you, this is really going to be quite something. You're going to have a global company with a lot of capital behind them. And so exciting days ahead for D&H. Congratulations to our friends there. Again, I've already thanked Alice, Joe, Andy, Paul, Sam, and the crew for being here regularly, but I do thank them again. Let's take a look at the MBA conferences that are coming up. We have March 26th through the 29th, the National MBA's National Technology Conference in the Hyatt Regency at Chicago. We'll be doing a radio program there from the D&H booth. Excited to be with them. Also, I'll be speaking at the New York MBA Conference. I'm a keynote speaker there doing a couple of training sessions. Very excited about that conference. That is in Albany, New York, 4th and 5th And then we are going to be back at the end of the month. We're going to be at the National Secondary Marketing Conference at the end of May. Also, just some of the other things that are coming up. There's so many conferences that we'll be going to and speaking at, but the National Secondary Conference is the next one after the Tech Conference for the MBA. Encourage you to check out these conferences, folks. There is so much information at these conferences, and a good number of them are, the MBA wants me to be doing more and more radio podcasts from these programs, or from these conferences. So we're thrilled to have the opportunity and the open door. Well, let's open the door to Joe Farr of MBS Quoteline, giving us an update
on
everything going on with the markets. Hey, Joe, how are you, friend?
I'm doing well, thank you. Yeah, we're up a little bit today. Can't say it, nothing really to point to other than several Fed speakers have been out, and the messages have been sort of mixed, and the market's been reacting in both directions. But right now we're up 3/32, and you know, one of the things that is beginning to get a lot more attention, Dave, and we've talked about it in the past, is the balance sheet. And, Fed Chair Yellen's talked about it. The minutes talk about it as being something that they will basically begin to reduce once they have normalized rates. And finally, we're starting to get some definition what that might be. And it seems like it might be after two more rate hikes. And so, getting close to it, and when they start making some concrete decisions about that, I mean, the speculation is going to create some volatility for a while, but concrete reaction or concrete positions on the balance sheet are likely to have a pretty significant effect on the market when they first become known. So always something to keep in mind. And boy, we have seen some volatility lately. I wanted to go back to basically when the Fed began telling the market to be aware of more rate increases. It began on February 27th, I think. On February 24th, we reached about one of the highest points of the year in MBS prices, lowest in rates. And that Monday, after that, the Fed speakers started coming out. They started talking about rate hikes and the need for the market to be aware that they were going to happen maybe at a faster pace than what they had built into their plans. And MBS prices fell by 2%, 200 basis points, between February 24th and March 14th. Rates rose about a quarter of a point. It was not only the Fed speakers telling the market that, but the data also came in stronger than in many cases what was expected, but certainly strong data helped support the Fed's argument to be a little more aggressive about raising rates. And then on the 15th, when the Fed meeting occurred, we saw a bit of a rally. The result, I think, of the fact that the Fed's minutes only revealed two more rate hikes after the March rate hike, only two more rate hikes in 2017, and the market had quite frankly begun to believe that there might be more than that. And so there was a bit of a relief rally. Both the stocks and bonds improved after that. And that 25 basis point rise in rates, we got back about 10 basis points in a drop in rates. So still not where we were before all the Fed speakers started giving us the warnings, but nice to see some of it be recovered. During the week, last week, the inflation data did reflect that inflation is moving toward the Fed's target. The data pretty much matched expectations. Retail sales showed a very nice number. The growth rate was small, but that was because it was coming off of a very big January. And the fact that we had such a big January and we grew it all in February was a positive thing. Then the home builder confidence came out, highest in over a decade. I don't know if you saw that, Dave. And both housing starts and building permits rose to the best levels since 2007. So that inventory shortage that we've been experiencing may have some relief here, but certainly builders aren't going to build enough to eliminate that shortage, so it's still going to be an issue. And then let's look at the week ahead. Not a lot on the calendar this week. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was looking at your website again. So concise, you know, just not a lot here other than existing home sales, which is a rearview mirror. I mean, I guess new home sales will be interesting, but
yeah, new home sales will be interesting. Yeah. Yeah, durable orders. But the big thing this week, Dave, is going to be Fed speakers. Just about every day this week, there are multiple Fed speakers coming out, and they are likely to create some volatility.
Wow, yeah. Now, every time they speak, they have a tendency to really have – their comments can have an impact on the market. And what are we expecting? I mean, how – it seems like there's been more hawkish tone, more of them slid over to the hawkish department area, but there are still some real strong dove voices in there. So –
Kashkari is one of those dove voices, and he weighed in on the balance sheet this morning saying that maybe the balance sheet ought to be the next thing they do rather than raise rates. They ought to be looking at reducing the size of their holdings of MBS and treasuries. So,
I can only imagine what that might have as a repercussion. So Kashkari is one of those interesting guys. Very fascinating to study his life. You know, I thought about you yesterday, Joe, when I was interviewing for a upcoming podcast, Jack Guttentag. And Jack is a dear friend, professor emeritus for Wharton MBA and finance, housing finance specifically. And I did an interview with him. He's 93, turning 94, so you don't know how much longer he's going to be with us. But I had more fun doing an interview. And he used to be with the New York Fed. Can you imagine graduating from college, you're going to get a job with the New York Feds? That would be just such an amazing job. And he had a fork in the road where he said, you know, do I want to go here or want to do academia? But we got him to talk a little bit about monetary policy. And, of course, where we're headed and the comments that he said that the education he received while at the Fed, and we're working on getting some of the Fed governors as guests. So our radio program continues to grow in interest. People are aware of it. And we've got several people dialed in from Washington, D.C. right now, staffers that are listening to the radio program. So we're having our better voice. And what they tell me is they listen because they get a sense of what's going on at the street. And we're a good representation, I think, of what's happening on the street. So that's pretty exciting, isn't it?
That is, very much so.
That was fun. I was thinking about you and Jack. I can't wait to play that podcast. We've got it edited, and we're in the process of having it edited down, get some of the oohs and ahs and ums out, and get it to fit for the podcast. So I'm looking forward to having Jack Guttentag on a little bit later. But I thought about you when I was doing that interview because it was interesting. Man, it was interesting. So, all right, folks, we're going to move on with the program. Yeah, without a oohs and ahs. He's a little bit of a slow speaker, so he thinks very much. I would have fallen asleep in his lectures because he just needs to pick the pace up a bit. But so we're picking it up through automation, what we're doing with the podcast. But it's really good stuff, and I just love the man. It's so inspirational. All right, we're going to be moving on with the program here. I love having you on, Joe. All the things you're doing is just wonderful. And your website is one of those tools that I do not understand how people operate their business and not have this. So if you want to learn how to get signed up for MBS Quote Line, listen to this message. We'll be right back after this brief word.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS Quote Line delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur.
Get MBS prices as trades happen.
Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock-float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect. And know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS Quote Line, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS Quote Line today at MBSQuoteLine.com.
MBSQuoteLine.com.
646-716-4972. The Lincoln on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lincoln.
Oh, there we go. Hit that mute button. That's what happens. You get those mute buttons going. So anyway, it's good to have you back, everyone. Again, this is March 20th. excited to have you listening in. Okay, here's some updates. Paul Mahler would normally come in and give us an update. Paul is out of the office, but I'm looking at their website. Two headlines leap off the page here at me. First of all is, go check it out, imfnews.com. But he's talking about wholesale broker channel saw big gains in agency market this last year. And it's something a lot of us have seen, that trend. And is it going to continue? John Bancroft has an article about that. But the article, I can't wait to get Ari Karen's update in the Hot Topics segment. It says DOJ filing reveals Trump wants to keep the CFPB, but with a removable director. I think a lot of people are hoping to see the CFPB go away completely. That is a little bit of a fantasy. And can you believe in Santa Claus and you can believe that the CFPB is going to go away, but neither are reality. So we're going to be getting some updates on the Hot Topics segment. Looking forward to getting Ari's take in all of that a little bit later. But let's go over to Alice Alvey. Alice with IndyCom Mortgage U. So good to have you here. It's fun seeing you at the Ellie Mae conference, Alice. It was really fun to meet you and your crew there. It's a lot great group of people there at IndyCom. So what you got for us?
Well, I got a few things. So, I think in the headlines, folks are seeing that CFPB has officially hit Nation's Star for the $1.7 million. We actually got a little bit of wind of that. That was being reported a little earlier in March with their SEC filing that revealed that. So as you dive into the weeds in terms of what actually happened, what we can find from actually reading the order, it really is the usual stuff that everyone needs to be watching out for within their HMDA report. Policies and procedures, having things reported correctly. You know, we know out in the land of HMDA, there are so many fields that are automated and we don't have to worry about, especially if the loan closes. It's usually all those unclosed loans that really cause a problem because they don't touch as many hands. Loans, whether they should be on the report or off the report. So really, whenever you see a HMDA fine this large, it is a wake-up call to everyone in the industry that you really need a third party to check your data. I'm not advocating that it has to be us. We certainly do that. We help with cleanup projects. There are many companies out there that do this service, but it is an absolute must that in 2017, this year, you go check 2016 and 2015 at the very least. Now, in this case, you know, it takes about a year to go through this. So any one of the agencies could be looking back at your 2014 data at this point because 2016 is so new. So I can't stress enough, you know, when you see something like this, it's a reminder to go look at your policies and procedures and have a third party come in and take a look at what's really going on so that you are prepared for the 2018 reporting that will have to change. So what we're all faced with is you have to be ready to go January 1st, which means you really should be testing that you can manage the changes in the reporting by June, because you've got to be able to look back at your data. You've got to be able to solve challenges with your LOS provider. We learned a few things from TRID, but the one thing with TRID that we don't have here is with TRID you had a little bit of a soft start. With HMDA, you actually have loans in November and December that may have to show up on your 2018 report if they don't have an action taken until 2018. So you'll have to take a look at what are the new fields that these loans might be subject to, and keep in mind you cannot report race and sex and ethnicity changes on the loans originated in 2017. You have to wait until 2018 applications before you can pick up those fields. So there's a lot of real tricky nuances, especially for this year-end loans, and you want to make sure you're starting to solve that by June. So that's a heads up there on my HMDA reminders. Might pick Ari's brain a little bit on his segment on some of the things that they're seeing already since he's coming on to talk about compliance. Nothing's moved yet in terms of legislation, in terms of where President Trump may be headed with some of the changes for CFPB. So we haven't seen any actual movement there beyond the executive order that came out back on February 3rd. And so those are my headlines as of today, Dave, is just give everybody a heads up to pay attention to that HMDA. This is the time of year that you really, now that you've got the report filed from 2016,
yep,
let's take a look at it and make sure you're ready for the new tool, because hopefully the use of the new tool will go smoothly for clients as well for this year's report. So lots to talk about.
Well,
on the front. You can reach us through email or phone.
Not Looking forward to that conversation. Yes, for sure. So much to talk about. There's so much happening, and then there's anticipation of what's going to happen. We're going to get into that. Really looking forward to your participation in the Hot Topic dialogue on this with Ari. So, folks, we're going to be right back after a couple of words from our sponsor. Be sure to stay tuned. We've got Sam Garcia in the box, ready to come on with an update on what's in the headlines.
If you have questions about mortgage regulations, Indicom Mortgage U has free answers. If you need ideas about how to reinvent your organization, Indicom Mortgage U will share great ideas. When you need help at any step of the loan process, give us a call or send an email. The Indicom team of experts have been helping mortgage players from origination through servicing for over 30 years. Your success is our focus. Whether it's a quick question or long-term support, portfolio, conventional, or government lending, it's a competitive market. So let Indicom Mortgage U give you the edge.
Simplifile has technology that gives you the ability to collaborate with settlement agents via real-time chat and messaging, allowing you to track changes, send, receive, and validate documents, as well as obtain status updates and deal with issues as they arise. All of this in a real-time electronic communication exchange. And best of all, you have a complete audit trail of all communications. To learn more, go to simplifile.com or call our good friend Nancy Alley at 1-800-460-5657.
So good to have you with us, everybody. And I'm just looking up and down the switchboard as I turn on Sam Garcia's microphone here and looking at people dialed in from all over the country. Really appreciate you making this a part of your podcast, or you may get this podcast the way you're getting your information. All right, Sam, good to have you here, friend. Check out Sam's website at mortgagedaily.com. And what you got for us, Sam?
Hey, David, good to be on the show. Hope you're doing well and loving this great weather we're having here today. Oh, I don't know if it's like that where
weather.
You are, but, man, it's nice.
It's beautiful.
Well, here's what we got going. We got some interesting stories that came out. Of course, you've covered some of them already with Alice, and Joe, of course, mentioned them. But Ellie Mae put out its February 2017 Origination Insight Report, and in that report, actually, it's kind of weird, refinance share increased, but at the same time, government share widened and loan approvals got a little easier. And what happened there is the average FICO score dropped 2 points from January to 720. So a little bit looser on the FICO scores. And the average loan to value was 79%, which was up from 78% a month earlier. So, you know, lenders taking a little bit more risk this in the most recent month, February. So we'll see if that continues, and I expect it will. Our mortgage market index, which, of course, is an indication of upcoming originations based on open-close rate lock volume, it moved up 11% last week. That was the fourth week in a row that the index has risen, and more significantly, that was the highest that we've seen the index since July 2016. So business was good last week. Always good to see increased business. And, in fact, yeah, and the Mortgage Bankers Association, they put out their mortgage finance forecast, and they predicted that first half originations this year are expected to be $811 billion. That's more than they expected last month in their forecast when they predicted it would be 782. So mortgage bankers are more optimistic about first half volume than they were just a month ago. And it actually hit both refis and purchases. And speaking of refinances, there were 208,700 Fannie and Freddie mortgages that were refinanced in the first month of this year. That was the fewest refinances of GSE loans since August 2016. That kind of contradicts some of the other metrics I just mentioned, but that, of course, is only Fannie and Freddie loans. So. Moving on, we maintain a Mortgage Daily conference calendar. And, of course, we cover upcoming conferences. We'll do articles about some of the ones that are coming up, usually every month or so. But our current conference calendar has 33 mortgage-related events that are listed for this month. And when I say listed, that means, yeah, it's got the name of the conference, who's hosting it, where it's happening, and a link to the conference website. Another 22 are on the schedule for April, while there are 18 in the following month. So that's like 70 during the three-month period. A lot of events going on during this period.
Yeah.
Some of the topics are covered based on just our last coverage of this. And when we do a story, we also try to include the price of you know, whatever the event is. Some of them that are coming up include reverse mortgages, mortgage leads, and mortgage servicing rights. There's a mortgage servicing right form coming up. Over at Radiant Guarantee, they announced last week that they were going to expand their guidelines. And among the updates are guidelines on jumbo mortgages up to $1 million. What they've done is they've increased the loan-to-value ratio they'll accept on those jumbos, and they lowered the FICO scores that are required. So easing up, kind of reminding us, it's funny when you see this happening, because after or around the time of the crisis, we just saw those mortgage insurance guidelines be tightening every week. You know, something, some state they wouldn't lend in and some program they were dropping. But we're seeing, you know, the opposite now, just constantly expanding. And what was kind of interesting in this last Radiant announcement was that they said they'll now insure AIG's Connective Jumbo program under their non-agency jumbo offering. And, of course, that product is offered by AIG Investments, a subsidiary of American International Group, and the former parent of United Guarantee. So I wonder if they're picking up a program that maybe you're taking advantage of a situation where United Guarantee has just been sold, of course. So.
Right.
There was an announcement last week from the law firm of Cohen, Milstein, Sellers, and Toll, and that indicated that there was a $165 million settlement reached related to mortgage-backed securities. The plaintiffs in the lawsuit are pension funds, with the New Jersey Carpenters Health Fund as the lead plaintiff. At issue are the loans that were originated by Novastar, and also named in defendants in that lawsuit were the Royal Bank of Scotland, Wells Fargo, and Deutsche Bank. So we're still seeing some fallout from mortgage-backed securities and, you know, entities, institutions that took hits because of bad ratings and what they claim, you know, were being misled on the quality of those loans that were backing those mortgage-backed securities. One other thing I wanted to cover, and it's significant because we're doing our mortgage employment index in the next week, and you're going to see some numbers about what's happening as far as layoffs. And there haven't been really many lately, that's for sure. We haven't seen any big rounds lately, but Bank of California, they're laying off 139 people. And what, of course, Bank of California is the company that recently announced that it was going to sell its mortgage business entirely.
Over.
So now we're seeing some of the fallout, even though there'll be some employees that are picked up by Caliber, which is buying that business. But so that was that's about one of the probably the biggest round of layoffs we've seen recently. And PHA's has had a few so far, but not a whole lot versus, you know, what's going on over at PHH. But those are some of the biggest headlines that we had over the last week. Of course, a lot of stuff happened, but that's the stuff that people were most interested in.
Yeah, I love the fact that you have the data that you have, Sam. It's really good stuff, good information. I encourage people to check out your website. They can do so by going to MortgageDaily.com or give you a call at 214-521-1300, or email Sam at Sam Garcia, all run together, at MortgageDaily.com. Thanks, Sam.
Yeah, appreciate, and I just wanted to mention real quick, too, that we've got our big biggest lenders report coming out very shortly, too, and that's always interesting to see who's at the top of the list, because there's been some changes. We've seen shifts going back and forth, so we'll have that out soon, and I'll be talking about that on one of your upcoming shows.
Good. Looking forward to that. That's real interesting. I interviewed Jonathan Corr late last week, on Friday afternoon, president CEO of Ellie Mae.
Ellie Mae.
Really interesting interview. Yeah, I mean, the culture that's at that company, it's something I'm just so impressed about. So they got some great data as well, and I know you pull on a lot of that. So great. Good job, Sam, all the way around. Appreciate you being here and look forward to having you back next week. Go out and enjoy.
Thank you for having me, sir. Appreciate it.
Always a pleasure. Folks, I look at what we have to cover here, and it's just so much, but we always take time for our sponsors. They are so valuable. And we now have Shawnee Huddendale, who is with ArchMI. We're going to have her talk briefly about the RateStar program. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Thanks, David. ArchMI is proud to be a sponsor for the show. We're even prouder that ArchMI and United Guarantee are now one company. For LOs, this means a stronger MI partner with more solutions, more innovation, and more customer support. Together is better.
There is no question Together's better, and they had their big sales meeting last week. It was really fun to see what they had going on there. So let's get over to the Profit Doctor. So good to have Andy Schell joining us today. It's not always possible because of his busy schedule, but it's good to have you here, friend. So, Andy,
hi,
I thought
Dave.
About you this weekend. I thought about you. Oh. You were on my mind as I'm sitting here pulling together all the information to send off to my CPA to do that project. And interesting, everyone I talked to, we had two things in common. We were all watching March Madness, some of the amazing basketball that was being played this weekend, and we were all working on our taxes. So I don't know if it was the weekend or what, but it was tough to do with all the beautiful weather we had outside. But that was a common denominator. And I'm wondering, Andy, if you have any words of wisdom when it comes to those companies that struggle with preparation on their financials and their taxes and all that. You got something there, Profit Doctor?
You bet, Dave. Well, there's two things. One, there's the company side of it, which is the corporate tax filing, which was actually due last week, so you're already late. So the corporate tax filing, the 1120 is passed. So now we're coming up on the 1040 filing, the individual filing deadline, which is April the 15th coming up. So we all got to get out that shoebox of receipts, or if they're smart like you, Dave, they take pictures of every receipt every time they spend a deductible item and store it in that cool little app you've got. So that's really awesome.
Yeah.
But the scary thing that happens is, you know, it does. I don't know if you want to tell them what that app is, but you got a cool app for that.
It's TurboScan. Since you brought it up, it's TurboScan. It's one that I do, and I take a picture of it, of every receipt I ever have, send it off to my accountant. My bookkeeper, she inputs it and goes from there, so it's all in there. So, yeah, staying on top of this stuff, Andy. So, but you were starting to say.
Yeah, and in your case, so you got your every receipt copy, and you're ready for the deductible items versus the non-deductible items. And, of course, Nancy goes through all the non-deductible items and goes, well, what's this? So, your wife.
Yes.
So,
yes.
So you got all your
stuff.
Yes. You got your W-2s, your 1098s. That's interest, or you received 1099s, that's interest you paid, or you may have 1099s for other things. You get your receipts from your donations to Goodwill, and you load it all up into TurboTax, and it's a whoops, what the heck? You have to pay more. It's a red number, not a green number. You're not getting more, you have to pay more. So, you know, we want to plan a little bit more. So it's that unexpected 1099 that came along, or you have joint income that pushed it up a bit, or there's a cap on the deduction you thought you could deduct, but you can't because you made too much and it limits it. So this year, as you pay more, we want to think about how to plan for next year so we pay less. So it's planning ahead. So as you're paying more now, start planning now so you pay less next year. And some of those basics are, you know, it's just, if you have a joint income, don't fill out the paperwork at the payroll department of your company and each a husband and wife select one deduction. That's not going to be good enough. You got to get your tax return, calculate your joint effective tax rate, and apply that to each of you separately, or you're still not going to have enough taken out next year. So you got to do that. The other thing to do is have more deductions, and you could be that you have deductions, but you can't find the receipts. So be sure and capture the receipts. Be like Dave does. Take copies of stuff, and then be aware of the caps. And there's caps around things like passive activity, and there's alternative minimum tax, and there's all kinds of funky rules out there that TurboTax does a pretty good job at identifying, but the key when you're doing your tax planning is to get a qualified CPA tax advisor to help. And I don't mean just a CPA like Joe and me who know mortgage banking. So if you're going to deal with mortgage banking, you better get a CPA who knows mortgage banking, not just any CPA. Same thing with taxes. Don't just get any CPA. Get a CPA tax expert to help you sort through the next steps. And there you go, Dave, with the disclaimer that I'm not a tax expert. But get someone who is and figure this out so you're not surprised next year and there's no more whoops next time you load the data into TurboTax.
But you are the Profit Doctor. You may not be a tax expert, but you know a lot about it. And you teach accountants how to audit mortgage banking companies. So I'm telling you, folks, if you're looking for, you can go to the teacher who's influencing and passing on all the knowledge, or you can go to the students. I don't know where you want to go, but I want to talk to the teachers telling everybody how to audit companies. Great job, Andy. Appreciate you taking a few minutes to be here with us. Really do appreciate it. I'm looking forward
my
to
pleasure.
Having you participate in the Hot Topic segment here, my friend. And also, by the way, I was going to say, I just found out this year is the first year that that LLCs had to file on the 15th. Normally, LLCs got to file on the April 15th and not March 15th. So that was the new change. I didn't realize that. So
two things real quick on that point, Dave. So LLCs, if it's a single member LLCs, its defaulted tax rate is a sole proprietor. If it's a multi-member LLC without any other condition, it's a 1065. If you adopt federal, if you drop C corporates with an S corp election, then an LLC is an 1120F, and that's March 15th. So it's not all LLCs can be three different things depending on the structure of the elections. Just to be clear.
There you go. Just to be clear, which means you brought all that up. People are going to have to go back and listen to it, which is a good thing. I encourage people to do that. I appreciate you. Thank you so much, Andy, for being here with us. We're going to run over for the KPI of the week. We have our friends at Motivity always giving us the latest on that. And so here is John Maynell, who's Vice President of Customer Service there at Motivity Solutions. And we'll be right back after we hear the KPI of the week. John?
Thanks very much, Dave. Always great to be here. And this week's key performance indicator focuses on one of Alice's favorite topics, namely the underwriting process. And the KPI is submitted to initial decision. This is generally measured in hours, and you can either use this to measure an entire department's average turn time or even individual underwriters. Very effective if you're using balanced multi-metric scorecards to fine-tune the behaviors of individual staff members. This measurement can also guide an organization to areas upstream from underwriting that contribute to this initial cycle time, like processing, setup, or even sales, to help ensure that people in those areas produce complete and accurate files that make the absolute best use of the underwriter's time. So the broad scope makes this a very powerful metric and shows yet again that what gets measured gets results. And with that, Dave, I will thank you again and turn it back to you.
I like that phrase, what gets measured gets results. What are you measuring, folks? Get a hold of Motivity Solutions. Get their dashboard set up. Well, it is a great honor to invite a good friend and someone I have had the privilege of really getting to know. He's now even become a client of mine, and I just really value the friendship and relationship with Ari Karen. He is an experienced litigator who represents financial institutions both in government investigations and litigations before state and federal trials, as well as at appellate courts nationwide. His practice is diverse, representing clients on matters concerning mortgage banking, regulations, Dodd-Frank, reform laws, contractual disputes, employment, and on and on and on. He is a principal at Offutt Kerman Lawsuit, but he's also CEO of Strategic Compliance Partners, a really innovative tool for helping you manage more cost-effectively and yet more thoroughly your mortgage compliance items. So, Ari, so good to have you here, friend. Appreciate you.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
It's always fun. I enjoy our conversations. We are so wired so similarly in so many ways. We were both going with our hair on fire so many times, but you're just a wealth of wisdom, and we're excited to have you sharing in here with us. Let's talk about some of the timing that is expected related to reforms. A lot of lenders in the industry are expecting reforms. They just assume, well, we got a major change in the administration, House and Senate, and that's going to just bring about all these changes. And I want you to give us your perspective on what is realistic about what will happen and the timing of what will happen.
Okay, well, thank you. I think, first of all, I wouldn't expect anything to even start until summer. I've obviously been watching this very closely and, dealing with various connections we have at various Senate offices. And it was originally slated as something that was going to be happening right about now. That was sort of what we were told. And then healthcare sort of got put on the front burner. And now I think it's what I'm hearing is summer. And frankly, I'm even a little bit not sure if it's going to happen this summer, so it might get pressed to fall. If you know anything about Congress with the breaks they have in the summer and various things going on, a lot of times things get held over to fall. So I think it's certainly at least or at the earliest going to be the summer. It could very well become the fall before we even really get started with it. And remember, starting it is getting into the various subcommittees and then getting through the subcommittees. None of that's even started yet. We don't even have the initial bills from Hensarling's office released. So I think, you know, the beginning of this process will be summer, fall.
Yeah, you bring up Hensarling. Is that the office that we should be paying the most, the closest attention to of what will be coming, of any changes and reforms that will be coming from?
Yes, I think so. I mean, he was one of the primary architects of the Financial Choice Act, which is what Trump is going to be utilizing, it appears, at least. Again, this is all secondhand information. He'll be utilizing that as the roadmap, so to speak, for the Republican reform and the Trump reforms. Now, that is going to look different than it had in the past. So if you wanted to see what it looked like when the Republicans put it out last year, it is going to look different from that. My understanding is that from various people is there's going to be a focus on UDAP. There's going to be a focus on changing, potentially changing it to a commission, things like that. So I think and then obviously a lot of the things like Volcker rules and the capitalization requirements, banks, too big to fail, I think those are going to be a lot of the areas. I don't know, and we'll get into this a little bit more, but I don't know necessarily that we're going to see, you know, to kind of echo a point you made earlier about Santa Claus, I think
yeah.
there's a better chance of seeing Santa Claus than you know, seeing
yeah.
the end of the CFPB. I'd bet on Santa Claus personally.
Yeah, seeing Santa Claus before the end of the year, I would agree. Let's talk about the PHH case and the effect that that has. And while, by the way, while we're going through this, Alice and Andy and Joe, if you guys want to jump in at any point in time and insert a question here, please feel free to do so. All right, so the PHH case, any effect on all of this?
Well, I mean,
Part of it.
Yeah, I think it is going to have an effect because we could, you know, what you can't do through legislation, you could, in fact, sometimes do through regulation. You know, a lot of what the CFP does and frankly, a lot of concerns that the Republicans had as embodied in the Financial Choice Act and that Trump has talked about and his administration have talked about are things that could potentially be changed with leadership at the CFPB. I mean, if you go around and David, I know you have to various banks in the country and you talk to leaders of these institutions, you know, a lot of what people say quietly and silently is that the biggest problem they have with the CFPB is the fact you just don't know the rules and or that the rules can change at a moment's notice, this whole regulation through enforcement. Now, that can be handled legislatively to some extent. It could also be happen with a change in leadership of the CFPB. And that's where this PHH comes in, because if PHH was determined in such a fashion that the CFPB's leadership could be changed at pretty much the whim of the president, which is what, you know, the court before it was taken en banc, the court had essentially ruled that, then some of these changes could almost have immediate effect. However, that's obviously now all on the back burner because of the decision to hold the hearing or review the case en banc, meaning the full court hears it. And what that means is ultimately this original opinion we had is effectively, you know, non-existent. It didn't really happen right now. So we're really back to the beginning where we were with the decision prior to the circuit court determining that the CFPB was unconstitutional. That's sort of all gone right now, and we're waiting to hear what happens. The other thing that's interesting here is that the court could sidestep the whole issue. So in other words, the court unbanked could just decide, hey, we're not even going to deal with the constitutional issue. We'll decide RESPA and nothing else. And that would leave us basically in the shadows trying to figure out what this all means about the CFPB's constitutionality. DOJ just jumped into this,
right.
So that could affect it too. I think when
let's
look
go
at
there
the totality
for a minute.
Of it, yeah.
I mean, well,
go ahead,
you were just quoted in the New York Times concerning the Department of Justice's actions on the PHH case. Can you explain what happened and why this is so significant?
Well, first of all, I mean, look, I'm not a government historian scholar, but to have the Justice Department advocating on behalf of a private litigant against another government agency, I've certainly never seen that. I don't think it's a very frequent thing that happens, but that's what occurs,
that's
right?
Unusual,
we're living in a,
to say the least, yeah.
Yeah, it's, we're living in a very interesting time, right? So that happened. That in and of itself is very unusual. But the other thing is what it signifies. I mean, think about this. A lot of times, you know, representing clients, a lot of, you know, you're scared when or you're worried necessarily when the CFPB gets involved and you're litigating with them. Then DOJ joins the party. Right, that's not a good day for your client when the Department of Justice gets involved, and what you
right.
really and so it's a huge leverage point the CFPB brings. You know, sort of like my big brother is going to come and beat you up, sort of stuff. Right, what you see now is the very distinct possibility, given that they're actually infighting. What happens when there's a fair lending case and they run over, CFPB comes over and says, hey, DOJ, we want you to bring this. It's a redlining case, but maybe DOJ's priorities are not to pursue that. Or
yeah,
if it's a False Claims
yeah.
Act, right? If it's a case under the False Claims Act where DOJ primarily handles those and DOJ says, yeah, not so interested anymore. I mean, I can't tell you it's going to happen, but certainly there's dissension in the ranks, and you could see the ability of the Trump administration, even if they don't succeed in being able to change Cordura right away, you could easily see where they could essentially utilize the Department of Justice by sitting on its hands to undermine the CFPB's agenda, again, even if they can't change Trump.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I'm going to toss the mic over to Andy Schell. He has a question, a specific angle to go at. So, Andy?
Hey, Ari. Thanks for being on the show. I love the analogy. We're more likely to see Santa Claus than see anything substantial happening at the CFPB, if I understood you correctly. And that's a great point. So what I'm wondering about, and you're a tactician, I can tell by hearing you discuss this, that it's like, well, this could happen, that could happen, this could happen, all these permutations. So I'm wondering, can you identify anything specific that might? I know it's just your best guess, and that's good enough for me, but of all this long list of stuff, what's one or two things that you think might actually get addressed that affects mortgage lenders?
Okay, sure. And just to be clear, I was saying getting rid of the CFPB, Santa Claus. I think there could be some pretty substantial things happening at the CFPB. How many of those things will affect lenders? You know, I think maybe my answer to your question will be better suited to do that. To do that. So, you know, what I think really could change. I do think that there is a huge focus on addressing the ambiguity of the whole unfair, deceptive, abusive acts and practices, right? I mean, right now it's almost like the definition of pornography. You know it when you see it, and even that's probably more specific than, you know.
I love that analogy. It's so true.
Yeah, and I think the CFPBs is a step further. We'll tell you when we see it, not just we know it. We'll tell you later, right, after we see it, what it is. So I think that there's that aspect of it which has drawn the ire, I think, of both politicians. It's drawn the ire of the Small Business Administration. I mean, a lot of people have issues with it. And so I think that's certainly one area that could be refined so that lenders will have a much better idea of what they can and can't do and what the boundaries are. So I think that's one area that's going to come under focus. Sorry, go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, that's awesome. UDAP is one of – I mean, Alice wakes up in the middle of the night talking about UDAP, I hear. So I don't know if she wants to opine in here now.
Yeah, it's going
to
jump in, Alice.
That's one of her favorite topics.
That's funny. Well, I wouldn't say it would wake me up in the middle of the night for some of our customers, that's for sure. But so UDAP is very interesting. I completely agree with you that we don't have a very bright lines on it. But I actually had a question teed up. Can I change the subject to RESPA? Because I noticed you all published a survey that you wanted lenders to take, because RESPA has been a new hot topic in terms of, you know, is paying Zillow a violation of RESPA? And really you have the whole social media and shared marketing that's taken on a new dynamic in the industry with all the Internet resources. So can we jump gears here and get the latest on your thoughts on the RESPA risks today and if Zillow's a risk?
Sure, I'd be happy to. You know, I think what happens, look, you know, anytime you're engaged in co-marketing, there's risk, right? Because like anything, one of the analogies, I use is driving a car. You know, if you don't know how to drive a car and if you drive a car recklessly, then yes, it can be a very dangerous weapon. Driven properly, then, you know, no, you should be able to get to A to B pretty safely. So I think co-marketing is a little bit like that. Yeah, you can do it wrong. There are a million ways to do it wrong, and I've seen a lot of them, so probably have you. I won't necessarily spend our precious moments here going into all the things you could do wrong with it. But the real issue I had is that people were coming out saying that per se, because you use Zillow, you're violating the law, and as a result, you're going to get a call from the CFPB or some other agency. And I don't think that that's true. I've certainly been involved and seen investigations where there is involvement of social media with it, maybe Zillow and other sites. And I think what people are doing is they're drawing conclusions from that when they see potentially CIDs that mention these things. You know, I think a conclusion is being reached that, oh, Zillow's the target. Zillow may or may not be the target there, I think, but it's also highly possible that Zillow was a vehicle in which another target was engaged and how they utilized it. So I think people are sort of taking that jump and saying that, well, because Zillow, hence it means Zillow is a target of the CFPB. Or even worse, you know, that because you use Zillow, it's a violation. You know, in theory, and I don't know whether Zillow is or isn't a target, but that is distinct from the issue of if you use it, you violated RESPA. And I think people are taking a jump there from one thing to the next when that's not necessarily appropriate. As we all know, you could be utilizing a resource, utilize it wrong. Something the resource could be doing separate and apart from you could be wrong. That doesn't mean because you use it, you violated RESPA. And I think that if you were to draw the conclusion that by engaging in co-marketing through Zillow, automatically you're violating RESPA, that essentially puts everything you do with respect to co-marketing at risk and can you co-market at all. And I think that's fairly a settled issue that you can co-market with realtors. So I think people are just really jumping, taking this a couple steps too far in their conclusion. Does that make sense?
It does, you know, because I think the challenge is always for any lender is, am I actually paying for a referral, right? Or am I exchanging a thing of value and I'm not getting a service in return, or am I paying too much for that? And so, yeah, I think it's a great idea for people, if you do have some co-marketing, to talk to an attorney, because it's a balance of risk. I've had some customers that say, zero risk, I don't want to be on their radar, so I'm not going to do it. But on the other hand, they may be missing a marketing opportunity. Your ideas through with an attorney for sure.
Yeah, and I mean, again, I've seen, you know, people work through Zillow where they do it in such a way that you kind of, you know, you take a look at it and say, yeah, this is about as clean as it gets. You know, and I've also seen scenarios where people use Zillow and it's not clean at all. That isn't Zillow's fault necessarily. It's how you use it. And that was sort of my analogy with the car.
Great analogy. Joe, you want to jump in on this? At this point, do you have any questions or do you want to jump in a little bit later?
Sure. No, I'd go ahead and ask, because small lenders have really complained, and rightfully so, about the cost of implementing all the regulatory reforms.
Yeah.
And it's just such a burden on them. Do you see anything coming down the pike that would provide some relief to small lenders?
See, I understand there are various legislative bills out there that have either been thrown out there or discussed about, you know, helping, quote-unquote, Main Street. I'm a little bit dubious whether those are going to actually get any traction, because number one, you got to remember, I mean, let's just talk politics now, right? He with the money is generally in a better position to start with. Well, the large banks have a lot of money and influence, nothing against them. It's just a truth. And the smaller institutions have yet to really coalesce into a formidable body, right? So that already creates a question of, are they going to get a benefit at the table to the burden, so to speak, of the larger banks? That one question practically is one that I'm kind of asking, and I think we can figure out the answer there. But the other thing is, think about how it would affect the secondary market. If I have a whole list of regulations here that the big banks have to follow, but the small banks don't, what happens to the value of those loans on the secondary market? I mean, this might be a be careful what, about what you wish for situation, right? Because I got to think that that would affect the ratings. If it affects the ratings, it affects the pricing, right? You could see where that could go downstream. So I think it creates a lot of problems potentially, and there may be ones that the community banks don't necessarily want, especially because I think that, you know, sort of another part of my thinking, this is, again, just me speaking here, is that, you know, a lot of these regulations, what if you take them all away, right? What if you got a whole small banks that doesn't affect it? And let's say Trump doesn't win again, and it's somebody, you know, on the other side of it, and the pendulum swings back. Well, now we have to, first we have to undo all these things, right? That's going to cost money. And then 3 or 4 years from now, we're going to have to redo them again. Like, that isn't necessarily a good thing. Wouldn't it be better, I'm simply, again, asking this question, to take what we have, maybe tweak it, you know, have some changes to the comp rules so that, you know, maybe you don't have to get dinged when your loan officer makes a mistake. Things like that, things that are really driving people crazy, and get those fixed now and just accept the regulatory scheme. Long term, that could theoretically be a whole lot better than, you know, than kind of going with the tide of this is the way it's now, and 4 years it's going to change, and 4 years back, and you keep spending money changing and changing and changing. Maybe adopt a livable, workable situation that has a long-term, consistency.
When you look at some of the changes that are there, and both are what are possible, what is going to provide significant relief? I mean, that you really think is we can anticipate. And again, coming back to the when can we anticipate that? You touched on that, but I'd like to see if you could go a little more in depth on that.
Sure. Well, I think things like UDAP. I think things like change. I mean, certainly by 18, once the, you know, one way or the other, Cordray is done in 2018. Unless Trump decides to appoint him again, and I'm going to go out on a limb and say that's not going to happen.
Boy, that's a big limb. Yeah,
I know. I'm a risk taker. Assuming that happens right there, you know, the stuff like with that happened with PHH, you know, one day it's a $6 million fine, the next day it's $109 million because I said so, right? That sort of arbitrariness, which I think creates a lot of just a huge amount of risk for lenders that they really can't even calculate, which is a big problem, that really increases the cost of compliance. And I think that's a big change we could see, and kind of UDAP is going along with that. So I think there are certain changes there we could see. I also think that, you know, with the idea that, and again, no big secret here, that, you know, GSE reform is going to happen eventually. A big part of that is going to be the privatization of capital. We still have, you guys probably know the statistics better than I do, but I know the vast majority of loans still have GSE involvement. So I think that's something that everybody's wanted to change for some time. I think you could see some adjustment, maybe the ATR rules, to try to invigorate the infusion of private capital and become less reliant on Fannie Freddie. So I think those are areas we could see. Those are kind of the main areas I see things happen. I don't see stuff like HMDA changing. I don't see the LO comp rules changing. I don't think anybody even would want to think about changing back on TRID. That would be, you know, probably the worst thing anybody would want at this point. So those are sort of the areas where I see changes. I think there's also potentially changes that come down the road in terms of privacy laws where, you know, I can't believe I'm saying this, but, you know, maybe more federal regulation is actually better here so that we could have consistency.
Wow.
You know, from clients that have issues with privacy, the problem is you have a patchwork of laws that are different in every state and your response is different in every state.
Yeah.
You know, having something that's consistent that says, hey, if we have a breach, this is what happens, instead of getting 50 different answers, that would probably be very helpful to industry. So I've heard some things like that being rumored.
Are you thoughts about the CFPB becoming a commission versus the bureau that it is? And chances of that real quickly?
It almost makes too much sense to actually go right, you know, you think about this. Remember when this whole idea started with Elizabeth Warren, she wanted it to be a commission. Last year, the Republicans put in the Financial Choice Act. They wanted it to be a commission. Now, the Democrats really haven't been clear about it, but I haven't seen any opposition from that. They have said now it's not right because it would undermine the authority of the CFPB. Now, obviously, the Republicans, knowing that in 2018 they're going to get the chance to put their guy in there, so they're not a champion of it. But, I mean, when you think about it long term, it makes sense for both parties. everybody could claim a victory, right? And if you think about it, they've got to have a long-term view, knowing that it won't always be their guy. So at least we could have some consistency instead of these broad swings. So I think it makes a lot of sense. I know both sides have at different times thought it made a lot of sense. So for them to not be able to agree on that would seem strange. I think if they don't, it'll be because they don't agree on something else.
The clock when we do these interviews just runs so quickly. I want to go over to the digital mortgage, get your thoughts on that. Do you think any regulatory changes will impact the digital mortgage? There seems to be a lot. There's been so much momentum in that direction. Thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily think there's going to be changes, but I think it could invigorate that. I mean, to the extent that you have more clarity, I think one thing that holds back the digital mortgage is when you ask about the compliance sides of it. And because, again, we have this ambiguity of rules and things like that, and really there's been so far a disinclination to really provide guidance in types of new products and things of that fashion. I think this could be, especially once we can get some clarity on who's kind of in charge at the CFPB long term, that could really invigorate this because we were given some standards, some rules, and UDAP was a little more clearly defined. You could drive the compliance around this a little bit more such that you could have a meaningful and safer product. I think that's one of the things that's kept out of it. Because again, you know, digital mortgage, I see the future of, just so, and I know we got to go, but I just see it as a broader tool than, you know, insert these numbers and be done. You know, if you can have educational aspects of it, you could even foresee, I think, you know, potentially legislation down the road that said if you follow this kind of process that could almost oversee it from a technology standpoint, maybe it could be sort of a third-party oversight that would take away and provide almost another level of qualified mortgage to it. In other words, you do these things, then you can't have these defenses down the road. I really see the ability of technology to do that down the road. But again, that's going to require some type of legislative and or regulatory action, and you know, maybe that's in the future.
Well, you're a good attorney, but you also are CEO of Strategic Compliance Partners. Talk briefly about that. Tell our listeners what that's about and why they may want to check out the website and explore that as a service.
Great. Well, thank you. SCP is essentially an arm of compliance that works with your current compliance staff in whatever facet it needs, whether it's you're a company that needs a compliance officer and has nothing we can provide on site, or it's somebody who has a very diverse process that just needs some sort of oversight and assistance kind of at a very high level. Because we have teams of attorneys, and these attorneys provide compliance support all day, dealing with regulators across the country, and we really see trends in a very broad way that your typical compliance department won't see when they're working day in and day out in one location. And so providing that from, again, ranging from putting people on site to just providing outside services, the other critical thing we do is at a fixed price budget. So you'll know every single month, no matter how much you use us, exactly what it's going to cost. It's not your typical consulting firm where you get a bill every month and you don't know what next month is going to bring. When we tell you this is what the budget's going to be, it's going to be that every single day, every single week and month. And so it provides you fixed services at a fixed price, which I think is unique in the industry.
And I think it fits really nicely alongside of what Alice is doing. So I love this service. It's really good. The more I look at it, I encourage you listeners to check out Strategic Compliance Partners, their website, and look for it. It's a very innovative tool, and I applaud you for what you're doing there. All right, thanks so much for taking time out of your very busy day. I know how hard it is to get a hold of you, but it's just been a joy to have you on the program today. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here. I'm honored.
We've had as our guest Ari Karen, who is an attorney with Offutt Kerman, one of the principals there, is also CEO of Strategic Compliance Partners, and does a lot in the area of compliance, and a great friend and someone who could be a valuable resource. Encourage you to get a hold of him. Ari, what is the best way for people to reach you? Is it email, cell phone, phone number? What do you recommend?
Email is probably best, my email address. Do you want me to give it, or I don't know if it's on the
yes,
site
please.
Already? Okay, so
yeah, go
A-Karen.
Put it up. It's on the site, but go ahead and do that.
Oh,
yeah, give it.
Okay. So akaren@offuttkerman.com, and that's spelled, A-K-A-R-E-N at O-F-F-I-T-K-U-R-M-A-N.com.
I just realized it's not up on the website, but we will go back and edit it and get it up there. Thank you, Ari, so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much,
folks,
for having
we're
me.
Looking. It's a pleasure. Next week, we're going to be broadcasting live from the D&H booth at the MBA Technology Conference and Expo. Look forward to seeing you there. If you are at the conference, swing by the booth. We'd love to sit and visit with you and have you come on, grab a hold of the mic. Let's talk for a few minutes. Good to have you with us, everybody. Have a great week, and we'll look forward to talking to you next week.